is down the Minnehaha stream system, which is like right where I'm at. And as I'm walking this, it's like this 25-minute walk would be a 25-minute walk, 5-minute drive. It was like 8 degrees out, so I wasn't about to do that at night. But as I turn the corner, there's just like a, like this long strip of restaurants and different small like little pubs and bars and stuff. And I was like, okay, I need to start walking this direction, because I'd always walk the opposite direction, which was just houses and stream and stuff. But anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what episode, but I will update it. But this is the moment where I will welcome everybody to the podcast. Thanks for being here. I have Sarah here today. And we are very glad to have Sarah. Sarah, how are you doing today?
Not too bad.
Not too bad?
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Glad it's a little warmer. So, outside.
Yeah. But, yeah. That sub-zero temperature, which is also why we didn't have a podcast last week, is because we had to close down for negative, what was it, 15?
Yeah, I don't even remember. I think it has to be, yeah.
My mom, who lives in Little Fork, their heating started to not work up in near the International Falls area. Yeah. And the high was negative 22 below that day. And her house never got above 45. So she spent the entire day in a sleeping bag watching TV with the cat like buried inside the sleeping bag. And I was like, you know what? It's not that bad here.
No.
I think I can handle it.
Yeah.
So you preach this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about The Stranger.
Yes.
Why don't you give us a little recap about The Stranger a little bit in that piece of text?
Yeah, so the text, yeah, there's a couple parts that we didn't touch on necessarily, but the sermon was mostly just finding that hospitality of Abraham being in this land where he's considered a foreigner, and his wife dies, and now he has to figure out what he's going to do. How does he bury the dead? Because that's an important piece of the dying process and the grieving process for them. And so he goes to the locals in the land and tries to offer them money. And they keep saying, no, 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 this is a gift for you. And it's one of their, like, nicest tombs that they end up giving him to bury Sarah. And so I think it's this thought that, you know, a few chapters back, we saw sort of the hospitality that Abraham and Sarah extend people into their home and to make them feel comfortable. And now we find where he actually has to receive that same hospitality in somebody else's homeland.
Awesome. So when we're talking about like the hospitality, what I loved how you tied in, you know, the video into, so we have this wonderful video from Jean-Pierre, and he, like, it was just this beautiful tie-in to kind of help do everything. Is there moments of your life that you can think of, like, you can think of this own piece of hospitality that maybe happened with you, or even any stories out there that kind of emphasizes a little bit of that hospitality?
Yeah, I think when I shared about my internship, certainly when I moved to Pennsylvania, I didn't know anybody. Most of their interns were somewhat local, so they could easily go to their family's houses for holidays, at least within a few hours from where they were. Whereas I didn't have anybody. My family was 20 hours away from me. You know, we'd have to do a plane ticket or drive for a long ways to get to each other. And so me being their first intern that was not a local person really opened their eyes to a different type of welcome, where I don't have somebody to spend holidays with. I don't have all of these different things. So then people would start inviting me more and more and more, and making sure that I was cared for and had, you know, someone to celebrate holidays with, and that I wasn't alone. And I mean, I was constantly with people. I think probably 4 out of the 7 days throughout the week, I was at somebody's house for dinner or doing something.
Holy. So yep. Now, did you have did someone invite you into their house that you were staying at, or did they give you a residence, or was it just basically just like moments of just being alone and getting all these meals and things?
They have what they called a vicarage. So there you're not an intern, you're a vicar. And so they had a vicarage. They owned the house that I lived in, and they provided it with non-perishable foods. It was a fully furnished house. A lot of that's required through the type of internship program that they signed up for. But yeah. So, I mean, I really relied on a lot of people to show me the area and to just get to know people as well.
Vicar. Mm-hmm. Is like, so I don't know a lot about when it comes to like theological terminology, I guess might be the right way to say it. So vicar, what is a vicar?
Yeah, I can't remember the thing, but I think it's more or less like if a priest or somebody is like studying to be like the pastor, you know. I think it's more of a terminology used for like an olden name, right? Priest. Like I talked about a little bit how it was like stepping back in time there. And so that's probably why they use that term.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I haven't heard that term here yet. Yeah. So I'm like, vicar. I mean, I've heard of a vicar or at least the word, but I've never heard it in a sentence, I think, like the way that you just said it.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're down in Pennsylvania that you got shown all that hospitality, and then you moved, what was it, to Hibbing, mm-hmm. if I remember correct,
yep.
from your story this weekend, and you found a different type of hospitality there. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it's I think the point of that story was to talk about that woman, right, who was 88 years old. And how she had never, like, she's not considered a local or claim that she can be from there because she wasn't born in Hibbing. And how it's just a term that a lot of places continue to use, like smaller towns, right? Like in Pennsylvania, that was the same thing, was they don't love outsiders. If you're not born in Berks County, you're never going to be from there. And so it was this idea that a lot of places that you go, we always have this stance of like, you must be born in a place for you to ever like actually be a part of this place. Which the text shows us that that's not true.
Right. I actually have like, I know that experience, like even like growing up through the churches that I did. I grew up in International Falls, Minnesota, which is actually not so far from Hibbing. I mean, comparatively, I mean, they are pretty far from each other, but like as you're driving north,
yeah.
It seems like they're much closer because there's not much in between those places either. But I remember at my grandmother's funeral, now I had actually grown up in this church, but I hadn't been back in years and years and years because I moved away. And my grandmother's funeral, they wanted me, my grandma's wishes was to have me sing at the funeral. And something that I'm used to doing at many different churches, what I thought was very interesting is how unwelcome they made me specifically feel about coming into the church. And then on top of it, were very, very critical of the way I would either sing, how I would sing, the phrasing that was used, like it was all like I had to do the leading arm, like all these specific things. And actually, I was so surprised because at a place that I once was welcomed, it just felt like at my own grandmother's funeral, I wasn't welcome to be there. Now, I also like went from Catholic to Lutheran, like a lot of us recovering Catholics.
Yeah.
And I find that that's different. Very different here. When I first started working here, I had my mother come from up north, and she came down and wanted to see where I worked, and she came to one of the Christmas services. And one of the immediate things she said was, "Is like, I haven't seen this in a while." Now, she still lives up in International Falls area, but she was like, "I was welcomed like almost at every point at uh-huh. your church," and how much that makes us feel welcome and how much that actually helps out. that's not to, like, you know, pat the pack of Prince of Peace and what they do, but I think it's such an important piece of the Bible. So when you were writing this whole sermon, is there anything that you left out or anything that you wanted to put in, but you're like, I got to keep it underneath, you know, a certain amount of time? Was there anything else you wanted to add into, like, this particular text?
Yeah. I mean, we come into this text at Sarah's death, right? And we have no prior context of, like, her being sick or what caused her to die, right? It's just like, Sarah died at this age. Now we got to bury her. But in context of the Bible, it follows the binding of Isaac.
Okay.
There's just like a short snippet in between the binding of Isaac and Sarah's death where it just names some people, like a little bit of a genealogy. But it comes right after that.
Before you move on real quick, what do you mean by the binding of Isaac?
When Abraham is being told to sacrifice Isaac.
Okay.
From the week before.
Got it. Okay, yep. Thank you.
Yeah, they call it the binding of Isaac because they bind him before he's going to slaughter him.
That's helpful to know. There's things I don't know.
Yep, so. Nope, that's fine. but there's, in the Jewish tradition, rabbis have gone through the Torah, and we get these snippets of stories, and we don't really know how they go in the line of how they occurred. And so the rabbis insert sort of ideas, right? It's called the Midrash, where they fill in these gaps to these stories. And so they believe or have written about that it is not an accident that Sarah dies following this whole thing that happens with Isaac.
Okay.
We never see really what happens when they go home. We don't really know if she ever knew what was going to happen, what Abraham was going to do. But all of a sudden, they are coming down the mountain, and then we have the story where Sarah's dying or dead, right, at 127. And so they think that it's not an accident, that it's actually purposefully done to show that when she found out what Abraham was going to do to Isaac, that she physically dies because of how much this pains her.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I think it's just an interesting thing. I think that we gloss over when we don't look at both of them. Some things, like the timelines, may not fully add up. But again, this is just rabbis writing things to kind of fill in those gaps to help create a, like, fuller story for us, too.
It's also like one of those things. It's kind of like, and I think Paul always says, when you see someone, like, specifically the females I mentioned in the Bible, you pay attention. But I also, there's always these things. It feels like we get all this information sometimes about what happened to the male characters in the Bible, and then we get to, like, these blank spots, and then it's just like all of a sudden, like, for example, you're just saying, like, we have no context to why. But you're saying it's not always about, like, knowing the why, but reading in between the spaces, like, hey, she, like, this happens to Isaac, and she has a hard time bearing it, and so she has this part where that she dies. And the question would be, is part of her dying? Is it a piece of her that dies, or is it her actually dying?
Yeah, I mean, because from the Isaac story to this story of the burial of Sarah, it's a very significant moment, a turning of time, where Abraham officially now has put all of his trust in God, in God's promises, through the whole sacrificing Isaac and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Right? God knows that Abraham is fully getting it now. And so God then keeps the promise, right? But then also talks about the next generation and the generation after that. And so it's this pivotal moment where, it's the end sort of for Abraham, that is the fulfillment of the promises with Abraham. And we're moving on now with Isaac and with Isaac's offspring and all of those things. So is it also this idea that Sarah dies because she has fulfilled the promise for her?
Oh, that's interesting.
Because Abraham is fulfilling it, right? And now another matriarch, Rachel, is going to be stepping in and marrying Isaac.
Okay. Yeah. All right. All right. Yeah, that's okay. So we have that part. Is there anything else, like, and it can be no, but was there anything else, any other kind of narrative that you were, as you were looking at this piece of scripture, and obviously kind of thinking about how we were forming it from the stranger, is there anything else that was kind of left out that you were like, ah, man, I'd really love to talk about that, but it maybe doesn't fit in this particular message?
Yeah, I think Abraham does buy the land. So... there's a couple things. Was I don't think that he can fully give up to receive that full hospitality, because they truly don't want anything from him. They tell him this is a gift, and then we kind of ended the scripture on Sunday around that, right? And he buries his wife and everything. But there's like a bigger portion where he is having this conversation with the Hittites and is demanding that he needs to pay. He needs to buy this plot of land. And so then they end up going in this negotiation of how much he can pay for this land that they really just wanted to give him. And so I think one of that is just like Abraham, he can't fully rely on somebody else, right? Like he can't live into that trust. But then, you know, it's Hebron, which is in the land of Canaan, the larger region, which is modern day Israel.
Mm-hmm.
This is the promised land. This is the land that God has promised to give them. And so then by him purchasing it, it is one step closer into the fullness of the promise that God has given them in that land.
So that's why, because I was going to ask, I was like, why is it so important for him to buy this land? And you're saying the importance is that, actually repeat that for me, because I just kind of caught it. So
yeah.
Why is it so important for Abraham to buy that?
Yeah, so the land that he is purchasing is the land that God has promised him.
Okay.
And his descendants.
Got it.
So, which, I mean, yeah, when I started thinking about it, I was like, that could have really also worked in my sermon, because, you know, I go back at the very end saying that I was always like, I'm Pennsylvania Dutch, right? Our family was from Berks County. They were buried there where I was living. And so that's what it's like with God, right? Is
yeah.
that like you're always a part of this place, which, you know, I think could also work in this idea too of like he's living in the promised land that eventually will be all theirs. It's always been his, right?
Yeah.
But now, I mean, he has some sort of buy-in, but yeah.
And he's literally, this is something that I'm like, I always see kind of things like this, and some things that I draw, like I start to draw conclusions to whether they're right or wrong, but that's part of faith. Is I like the, it's interesting to think about, and maybe I even have a question about it, is you have Abraham, he's promised this land. You know, like God promises him this land. But Abraham is buying the land. Like he's promised the land, but he has to actively go and get it. You see where I'm drawing, like trying to drawing here?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to find, because like those are, that's the thing that kind of sticks out to me is like, so, you know, I think it's like, you know, every now and again, like, you know, when you pray for patience, right? There's that whole thing. It's like, if you're praying for patience, God isn't going to make you patient. He's going to give you opportunities to show patience, right? And so it's like, do you think that kind of ties in with Abraham? Like, I promised you this land, but you have to go and get it.
I think it very well could be. I think we can also look at it as, what if it was God's plan that the Hittites wanted to give it as a gift? Mm. Right? And Abraham's still like, nope, I need to purchase this. But I think of, for Abraham, who has always been somebody who has been on the move and has really never had a stable home, like he's lived a nomadic life, this is his first opportunity to really own something that's his.
Oh, I like that.
And so I think that it's really important, right, that, this land is promised. And maybe this is the opportunity, right, that God's giving. Like, here's your in, mm-hmm. Take it. But I think the importance is also that he has a place, a stable place for him to come. And that's where he buries Sarah. That's where, all the matriarchs and patriarchs are going to be buried along with her. And so I think maybe that's more of the significance, is that, yes, you can have this great gift, but of some of it, he needs to put down his own roots and buy into the promise as well.
Okay. Yeah, that's okay. That helps me out. Think about that. Because, like, I guess I sometimes when I look at the Bible, I'm looking more from, like, what's God's motivation in this moment. But I love that, what if the Hittites gave him it, and he's like, no, I appreciate that, but this is something I have to do for my, like, for me and how I come at things. That's really interesting. I really like that. So we're talking about the stranger. And we got through and we talked about the hospitality piece and how that's all important. How can we practice some of this stuff here at Prince of Peace as disciples, or just in life as disciples of Christ?
Yeah, I think it's this hard idea, right? Because we like to be the host. Like a Mission Outpost, right? We are the host. We are all of that. But sometimes how different is it if we are the people who are relying on the host?
Mm.
Right? Like the story with Sean Pierre, there was a period in his life where he never had to rely on a host. He could be the person that, gave these spaces to other people through his architectural gifts. But it's not until... when he's being struck with a hard time, that he has to rely on a host to provide basic needs like food, help with medical things and all those things. And I think that changes some perspective, is when you have to rely on another person or another being. And I think, like Tracy said, in America, we cheapen it so much, the idea of hospitality, because you go to a lot of foreign countries. Like I was just in Greece and Turkey, and the idea of hospitality is a very big thing. They want to help you. They want to make sure that you are being taken care of, and that you've got enough tea, that you get enough to drink, that you feel welcome. And our country is not always like that, right? Which then seeps into how we interact socially with each other, that we don't always rely on those types of things. We rely on ourselves instead of trying to rely on others.
Mm.
But I think about like when my grandmother was little, she would talk about how they would go over to their aunts and uncles and they didn't have phones. And, like, they would just, on a Sunday, just drive to like, her aunts and uncles to go see their cousins. And I was like, what if they weren't home? Like, that would be such a wasted trip. But that's how they did things back then, right? Like, you were relying that somebody was going to be there, and then that person would be providing your Sunday dinner for family time.
even as kids, like, right. I remember being like, I'm going to go over to my friend's house. There's no text. There was no call. I just bike there, you know, and be like, hey, you know, is Pete home? And they're like, oh, yeah, he's out back, you know. And then it was just like, hey, do you need some water or something? And I think it's interesting because I think there is a piece of that that has, like, gotten lost. I resounded perfectly with the same spot that you did that Tracy talked about when it comes to hospitality and how it's become more like the hospitality industry. And I think she even used that as a reference. And it's interesting because there's this piece and there's like, I was doing about a year ago, I ran into a similar situation, not as Pierre, but in a moment where I was used to relying on myself or a partner for a long period of time. But it got to a point where I couldn't really do that anymore. It was past the point of what I could handle. But there was one thing I had the hardest time to do, and it's like a nightmare for me to do still to this day, and that is asking for help. It is like one of the pandemics in America is like people have the hardest time asking for help. And I think there's a tie-in between how we treat a stranger asking for help that gives us that anxiety. You know, we work here where we're very good at, well, where we can be very good at like giving that kind of hospitality. But now, like, even then, working here and seeing it, still having the hardest time asking for help. And maybe that might have, like, that's kind of an underlying thing that I even thought throughout the sermon, is like Pierre had that strength, like to come in and ask for help. And that'd be one thing I'd love. You know what? We should get Mission Outpost on here. And I'd love to know, how hard is it for some of these folks to come in a situation where it's like you're in your lowest moment? I think there was a story that PD talked about like weeks ago. It could have been even in December. I can't really remember. It all mushes together after a while. And he talked about this lady who was out in the parking lot in her car.
Oh, yeah.
And she was just sitting there. And she was just sitting there. And she was just, she was distraught because she felt the embarrassment of not being able to come in and ask for help until Petey recognized this person out there and invited her in. Yeah. Sorry. Tangent.
No, that's fine.
So, yeah. So what else about this particular text? Is there anything else that you kind of have, like, worrying around in your brain or anything like that?
Yeah, I think the only other thing that I explored a little bit is, so, like, I had an Old Testament concentration, specifically in Hebrew.
Okay.
And so I like to look at, with these texts, sort of the breakdown, right, in language. Because often in our Bibles, like, we miss a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It's not translated in the right way. And the term for Abraham when he's talking with the Hittites of trying to get this land is, he says that I'm a sojourner.
Can you say it again?
A sojourner. So he is, okay. He's temporarily in this land is what he's telling them. And I find it interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he has to know that this is the land that God has promised him. And for him to say, I am temporarily a foreigner, either is because he knows he's going to purchase land, or he knows that this is also promised to him. But he isn't automatically saying, like, this is what's owed of me, right? Like, this is a land that I'm going to have, because it's in the promise. And so some of it, I think, shows that he's starting to trust in the promise that God is giving him by saying that he is a temporary foreigner, right? It's not, he's not traveling in Egypt. He's not a complete foreigner. Like, this will be part of his home. And so he starts to trust God and believe what God has told him, because he's turned into this new leaf of fulfillment.
Okay. All right. I like that. You're not a foreigner in this land is basically, it hits hard. So as we are about to progress forward, what are we going to see moving forward with Abraham? Or do we see anything moving forward with Abraham, or are we moving directly on to Isaac in the story?
The focus is more going to be on the next generation. This is sort of the end of our main Abraham narrative. We'll find out he gets married again and has 6 more children with his next wife. But then he tries to find Isaac a wife, and then along comes Rebecca, and then they kind of get married. And so then it follows them and their offspring from there on out. So.
Okay. And I think I'm thinking about, like, Isaac, like, so you've got Abraham finding Rebecca for him. It's just a different time. And you've got this piece where, you know, Abraham buys the land. Now, his family lives on this land now, right? Moving forward? Or is it kind of like, do we just kind of go outward, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I can't remember if they actually just start living there, because he only has that tomb and like the little surrounding area where Sarah is right now. So I don't know if they actually have full land there. But what we gather from this text is that there's this deep respect between Abraham and the Hittites of him being in this land. And so he's not an unwelcomed foreigner to them, or a perceived threat either.
I love that. And I think that's pretty much where we could probably leave this off, because I do like the fact, because, like, at the end of the day, it's that relationship, and you can correct me on this, but it feels like that relationship between the Hittites and Abraham that really is kind of speaking into that hospitality piece.
Yep.
That's amazing. Well, thank you for sitting with me and having a conversation about all of this. And we're going to have you back, obviously, because you work here.
Easy to find.
Easy to find, just down the hallway. Well. But thanks for being here. Thanks for checking in with us here on the podcast. Make sure to kind of check out YouTube, to subscribe, all those things. We're also on Spotify if you choose to listen to this via just the audio of it all. But yeah, y'all have a good day, and thank you for being here.